This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Abdulaziz Sachedina is a professor of religious studies at the University of Virginia, and he joins me live in studio to talk about the Middle East and Islam. Thank you so much for joining me, and happy Ramadan. I know you're fasting, and I appreciate you. You've been up since 4 a.m., and you're fasting, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you sharing your time with us.
Thank you for inviting
Ramadan.
Me. Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be here with you.
Wonderful. Yes. Can you give us Abdulaziz 101, where you're from, and a little bit about your background?
Yes, I'm from East Africa, Tanzania, and I have been in the United States since 1976. And I've been teaching at the University of Virginia for the last 31 years. And I have been in the whole world, around the world. I was educated in India, in Iran, in Iraq, and many other places. So I regard myself as both American and as a global citizen in some ways.
Wonderful,
yes,
wonderful.
Yes, indeed, because I do share so many things in common with so many cultures in the world, you know. So,
right, right. Yeah. Let me ask you this. It's sort of a broad question, and feel free to give an extended answer. But right. When you watch the news about our troops in Iraq or Afghanistan, what are your thoughts? What comes to mind? Because you've lived in these places, you've studied in these places, you
That's
know
right.
these people.
That's right.
You are a Muslim yourself. What are your thoughts? Share with us your take on That's on right. what's happening.
Actually, I went to Iraq even after the invasion took place, and I was there in December of that very year, and I saw what the destruction had been. At the same time, it was quite gratifying to be in Iraq at that point, because I found there was so much relaxed atmosphere because Saddam Hussein was no more there, and people were really happy about that. And yet I was warned, even at that time, they told me very clearly that we really would like America to leave Iraq because it's not going to be good for us and there will be internal problems. And I think there has been that going on. And when I look at the news given every day in the media, whether it is, you know, the local channels or the national, international channels, I find that disturbing, that we did miscalculate the way we were told by the expatriate Iraqis who were in this country at that point, because I was also consulted in the Defense Department, and I was in a meeting with Mr. Wolfowitz and some of the Iraqi leaders. When I dissented from the other, from the views of the others who were present at that point, and I made it very clear, including Ambassador Crocker was there too. And I made it very clear that I don't think we understand the culture. I don't think we'll be welcomed. I don't think they will see us as liberators. They will see us more as intruders. And I think partly we have not understood that part of the world, the way we discuss them, the way we talk about them. And it is one of the major blows to our image in the region and also in the world at large, because people, when they see us as Americans, then they connect us with these kinds of blunders that we make, rather than with wisdom, with democracy, with human rights, you know, all these things that we brag about and we talk about and we tell the world that's what they should be doing, you know, instead of, you know, fighting with one another. And here we are caught up in the midst of all this. And I think what is the most troubling part is that we did not know the Sunni-Shia dynamics. We did not know how other countries in the region would really play out their games in Iraq, because they can't do that in their own countries. Saudi Arabia is a good example. Syria, another example. They can't do these things in their own countries, but they can do this in Iraq, which is now in chaos and in that political turmoil. They can have a lot of influence with the local population, whether Shia, of course, they are anti-Shia, all of them, because the Arabs, I don't think they ever expected the Shia government to appear in the Arab country like Iraq. After all, it is an Arab country. The fiction was that Shiism is connected only with Iran. And we were surprised, I think, ourselves to find so many Shias. 60% of the population in Iraq is Shia. So we really were taken by surprise. But I don't think we are now surprised seeing what has happened. The only surprise that remains to be sorted out is that we know so little about the Shia and the Sunni differences. We know so little about the interference of the Wahhabi government, the Wahhabi people, Wahhabi religious leaders in Iraq at the moment. The insurgents are not neutral people. They are being imported from outside. They are not Iraqis, because Iraqi Shia and the Sunni have lived together by side for many, many centuries. Yes, they have fought, but nothing like what we're seeing now. So there is a foreign hand in that. There is no doubt about that. I don't think we understand fully the implications. So one day we talk about, you know, well, one day we say, okay, we need to somehow, you know, comfort the Sunni leaders. Or, you know, we need to be on the side of the Shia leaders. But I think we don't understand the dynamics. And I think that comes against us and against our image in the around the world. If we really go... And I'm just coming back after 8 months in Iran, having spent my sabbatical there doing research. And I come back and I say, you know, we understand so little Iran. And Iran is demonized by us day by day. We dehumanize people of Iran. Iran is not that. Neither is Iraq that. The way we you know, in the media talk about these people, the way we show their images, you know, these are the people who must be bloodthirsty. These are the people who must be so violent.
Right, right.
And they're not. They're not really, because they are human beings. You know, violence is not natural to human beings.
And Americans are not the caricatures that we are often demonized in Iran by
That's
Iranian
right.
leaders.
But still, it's very surprising that the American people's image is very positive. You will not hear in the press any criticism of the American peoples. Usually the criticism is really driven against the American government, American administration. They make that distinction. We don't, by the way. We somehow, you know, put them all together. Government people are one and the same because we are a democratic system. And that's why we can't think, you know, but in terms of people and the government being one. Well, while they don't do it, they don't demonize Americans. They love America and they praise America. They know about, you know, the freedoms in America. They know about the opportunities. I mean, you know that there's a large Iranian population or even Iraqi population today in United States. And they see what are the benefits of being in this country, what kind of opportunities are being offered to them. And therefore, they don't have that same negative image that we have. Because we see them as violent and irrational people. We see the whole culture and civilization as being inferior to us. That's our perception of them. Whereas they see us, you know, something very different. Yes, they don't agree with us. They don't agree with our foreign policy. They don't agree with our president. But they are not demonizing us the way we demonize them, because we don't even know them. The way they know us, we might be, you know, known through our Hollywood movies, but there are some good movies too, you know.
And, right,
and,
right.
Yeah, and, you know, they watch both good and bad, you know, and sometimes they get wrong understanding about us, about being Americans, you know. How they ask me, for example, how can you be safe in Chicago? You could be killed in Chicago. You could be killed in New York. That's what the movies show. I said, well, no, I'm alive, you know, so it's not that bad, you know, yes.
My guest is Abdulaziz Sajjadina, professor of religious studies at the University of Virginia. What is it you think that most Americans don't understand or perhaps even misunderstand about the Islamic faith, about the Muslim religion?
I think we look at Islam as Christians look, you know, at Christianity, and we have a tendency, you know, we have a strong tradition of scriptural reading, scriptural reasoning, and we go back to our scriptures to find, you know, solutions, or at least argue about it. Our fundamentalists always do it. Evangelicals always quote, you know, Bible right and left, you know, New Testament, or it is Hebrew Bible, they do it. Muslim understanding of the scripture is very different, and they don't open the way we open. And therefore, I think sometimes it's very disturbing to find American scholars, you know, speaking about Muslims as if they open the Quran and then they go to kill. No, they don't do it. I think there are other incentives for them to go and kill besides the Quran. I think it's the politics of the region. It is the unfair distribution of the resources. It is, the corruption in those countries and our support of those countries that really prompt them to do what they're doing. It's nothing religious about it. And I'm telling you that I've tried to look at religion as the source of all these problems, and I find that, no, it is more the politics of the region.
So you disagree with author Sam Harris, his book, End of Faith.
Of course.
He quotes the Quran at length and says, this is not a religion that was hijacked by extremists. Yes. We're seeing the manifestation of the true believers, of the pure faithful. The book tells you to go kill people.
I wish the Muslims who were violent were reading the Quran as our Christian friends tell us, that they're reading the Quran and then they become, fundamentalists. Then they become the violent people. No, they don't read the Quran, because the Quran doesn't have only that message. Yes, there are verses in the Quran that do prescribe violence against those disbelievers who are disturbing the peace of the community, who are challenging, the authority of the rightful
people.
Just
as the Christian Bible does.
Of course. It is very much Hebrew Bible psychology that, all right, if you are going to establish justice, you'll have to use force sometimes. You'll have to enforce the laws. You'll have to have some kind of, control over the people. Otherwise, there will be chaos. And I think this is a Hebrew Bible prescription that Quran takes up. But the Quran doesn't go blanket saying, all right, go and kill anyone who doesn't agree with you. But there is certainly a requirement in the Quran that you must learn to defend yourself. If somebody is stepping on your toes, then you don't stand there and say, here, my another check, give it to me here on this side. Now, that might be Christian theology of pacifism, but there's no pacifism in Islam. There is an attempt to control violence in Islam. And the only way to control violence is to put moral brackets there. There should be morality. There should be ethics of war. And therefore, the Quran as a whole does not prescribe anything more than defensive warfare. If they attack you, you attack them. You don't stand there and watch them. If they don't give you your rights, then you fight back for your rights. I think that kind of psychology is very different than what is being portrayed in the book, written by our friend, Christian friend. That, all right, okay, this is what they do. They open the scripture and they go and kill people violently. No, they don't do that. Unfortunately, they don't even open the scriptures. They just know where their guns are, and they know how to, go and, disturb the peace and kill the civilians. Look at the insurgents. Which book are they reading when they kill fellow Muslims? When the Quran is so clear, you can't kill any believer. What kind of book are they reading? What kind of Quran are they reading? They're not reading any Quran. It's a political game being played out. Saudi Arabia is sending its own soldiers. Syria is sending its own soldiers because they don't want to see stable Iraq. The stable Iraq will show that, no, there could be another country that could be democratic, and then democracy will come to their countries and would challenge them. So I think...
So nobody in the neighborhood wants to see a stable Iraq.
Of course they don't want to see it. Because then there will be an upsurge in the demands in their own countries. Their nationals would say, we want democracy too. We want, our rights
too. How do you think it's going to play out? Are we going to see a lot of people are talking now very seriously about partitioning these groups, about having a Sunni area here, a Shiite area there, the Kurds to the north. And meanwhile, while that's going on, the Americans are building four massive bases with the intentions of staying for decades, as we are in Germany and the Philippines and Korea.
It's not going to be that easy for America to build the military bases there, because there is anti-American feeling is at its heights at the moment, even in Iraq, by the way. Yes, there are people who are very grateful to America for having removed Saddam Hussein, but they're not very grateful for having left the country in chaos, because it is in chaos and there's no security. Every day you wake up as a woman, as a man in Baghdad or any other part of the world, of that country, you're not sure that you'll return safe. And that's also with the holy cities like Najaf and Karbala. Wherever you go, there is always a danger awaiting you. How can you be grateful of any government in the world who comes and says, okay, we are going to give you democracy? What is the democracy for when we don't have security, when we don't have our own petrol, we don't have our own oil, we have to stand in lines for food, for everything? For every small kid, the hospitals are ill-equipped. There are no medicines. There are no, everything is there to complain about in Iraq. There's nothing to be grateful about in Iraq. How can, they look at us as saviors or some kind of apocalyptic eschatological leaders who are coming there, you know, saying that we can save you, you know, we can give you these things, we can give you, we can make you democratic overnight. People who have a history of 30 years of dictatorship, how can that change so easily?
What if the American troops left? Would we see a bloodbath? Would we see a Rwanda?
I think they would. At this time, if Americans left, I think there will be even more dangerous situation in the country. I don't think we are in a position to leave. Neither can we succeed, nor are we in a position to leave, because
it's like Saddam Hussein was the cork in the bottle, and we pulled the cork out and broke the bottle.
Exactly. We supported him when we wanted him to be there, and then we said, no, we don't want you anymore, you know, so we can kick you out, and we can then make this change with this country a democratic one. We haven't done it. You know, I think we have left, you know, all the shocking to me is that how little our media understands the culture of the people who are involved, the tribalism that is still dominant, the national culture that is still absent. There's no sense of, I am Iraqi first, and I need to work as an Iraqi national rather than a tribe, you know, of this or that sort.
My guest has been Abdulaziz Sajjadina, a professor of religious studies at the University of Virginia. I would hope that you would join us again. I have still a billion questions to ask you. Perhaps we can do this again sometime.
Yes, I'm sure there will be opportunity. After Ramadan, though.
After Ramadan, yes, of course. And thank you so much for being here.
Sure.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.